This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Sister Sledge, we are family. Joy 94.9, you're listening to Saturday Magazine with Mark Gardner and Jeff Hood. It's 20 past 11.
And we are about to launch into sport. It's the middle of the AFL finals season, if you hadn't noticed. And there's been a lot of talk.
Lots of sport going on.
Lots of sport. We've had the Olympics up and tennis and cricket and all that's about to start. I mean, I don't know when there is a quiet sporting season.
Before that, there was the Tour de France. I watched a lot of the Tour de France this year because someone said, I thought, oh, watching people riding bikes would be a bit boring. But they said, no, you see all this wonderful scenery. And I actually found the bike race itself really interesting to watch. And so a big sporting time for us, isn't it, I guess?
There is. And unfortunately, it's not all good in the world of sport.
Absolutely
not. There's a lot of homophobia. I wonder if they sledge each other as they ride past. As part of riding around France. We'll perhaps explore that. Joining us for our discussion today on homophobia in sport, we have in the studio Rob Mitchell, who describes himself as an accidental activist. We might ask him what accident got him into this whole business. He is also the community member of the Victorian Department of Sports Governance and Inclusion Steering Committee. I love people with a good long title. Rob, welcome.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Jeff.
Morning, Rob.
And on the phone, Dr. Caroline Simons, who's the Senior Lecturer and Coordinator of Sports Administration Programs, Human Movement and the RP. Caroline, you'll have to help me with HMRP.
Oh, we've changed our name. We're actually Sport and Exercise Science now, so that's a bit easier.
Oh, that's easy. Sports and Exercise Science at the Sunbury campus of Victoria University. Welcome, Caroline.
Hi there, Mark, Jeff and Rob.
And thanks, I have to say, Caroline, thanks to you and your family for delaying your holiday by at least 45 minutes to chat with us.
That's my pleasure.
Buy into whichever one you want. Perhaps we'll start with you, Rob. What got you into this? What was the...
Well, as you say, it was purely by accident. I'm living in the country now. I was originally, grew up in the country and then came to Melbourne and ended up back in the country again, just outside of Ballarat. And when you go to the country and, you enter the community, you really end up being involved in a sporting club, even if you haven't had a sporting background.
Because it's kind of the heart of rural communities, isn't it?
Well, it really is, and it's really the focus of all the socialising that goes on. So for the first year that we were there, I was just a small sponsor of the football netball club. And they tend to travel together, because you can imagine in the country area, you can't have sort of football fixtures at one end of the state and netball at the other end.
No.
So they go together. And that hasn't always been the case, and I think it's probably been a bit of a shotgun marriage at times. But that's the way that it works. And so the first year I was a sponsor, and then after that, which was at the end of 2006, someone floated the idea of me being the president of the local footy club. And, you had to sort of pick me up with a... I thought, well, I don't know anything about football, and, I was supposed to be fair, I didn't know anything about netball either. So they said, well, look, the presidential role is a bit of a figurehead role. What you do is just sort of, spearhead things and, But there was a couple of problems that they had with... One was to do with the water situations. You probably remember last year, we're in the grip of a drought.
Yep.
And the sporting, grounds, not just in Ballarat, but all over the place, were pretty much unusable.
A lot of them actually were destroyed, weren't they, during that process?
Well, it got that bad. I mean, it was like playing on concrete. And so it wasn't a matter of, well, we can sort of use it. It was a matter of we can't use it because there were some legitimate, health concerns.
Yeah, injury concerns. Yeah,
injury
absolutely,
concerns.
Yeah.
So, that was one issue, that we had a bore there on the oval, but it couldn't be used because it was too salty. And the other problem that we had is not peculiar to any one sporting club, or particularly football club, but you have this sort of discrepancy where some players are paid probably really quite significant amounts of money per match, and at the other end of the scale you've got players who get nothing, not even any petrol money. So they were sort of two issues I took on board, and I said, what we've got to do is we've got to end up with, given the price of fuel, we've got to try and end up with some sort of pay structure so that the people who were getting absolutely nothing could at least hopefully get back, what they were spending and running around. So I said to the secretary, look, what do you need in terms of funding to get this up? you know, how much extra funding do we need? And it was about 25,000 was the figure that was floated, which was a significant sum of money. But I thought it was doable because, and this is the reason why they get business people involved in football clubs at every level, whether it's Carlton or whether it's, you know, it doesn't matter, because, you know, they've got access to other people who will quite happily, you know, throw up some money, you know, for what is a good cause.
So you had some talent, you had some energy, and you had some interest. And connections.
And connections, because I was in Melbourne, you know, I was going to Melbourne every day, so I was able to access, you know, people who were sponsors that, you know, were on top of their existing sponsorship base. So that was all fine. And look, you know, as I said, you know, numerous times, there was no systemic homophobia in the community there. And clearly there wasn't. Otherwise they wouldn't have put me, you know, into the club. But there were one or two people that had a problem with it. And there were a couple of incidents. And after the second one, I was, you know, quite blunt to them and said if there was any more, you know, just the sledging and the, just the, you know, stupid, unacceptable comments that people make, if it happened again, you know, it'd be a case of three strikes and you're out. It happened a third time and I was, you know, very unhappy. And basically I said to the rest of the board, you know, I'm very unhappy. And they said, well, this is basically a problem between you and him. And I was unhappy about that.
Right.
So what was the sledge? They were sledging you as a board member. Was that the...
At social functions.
Right.
So, and look, let's be really clear here. It was essentially one or two people out of, you know, 100 and something. Who... Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I have a good reason why people do this. I suspect if I did, I wouldn't be sitting here. If I could solve this problem.
Yeah, well, that's right.
I mean, because it goes, as we'll talk about and as Carolyn will talk about, you know, there are some quite deep-seated sort of concepts here. But anyway, let's just concentrate on what
Well, I guess, I mean, I think what will probably come out in the discussion is that there's deep-seated concepts about homophobia in the community and why it occurs, and looking at whether that's a special case in sport, whether sport in fact exaggerates or concentrates some of the kind of attitudes that exist in the community. That's the kind of...
Caroline, can we bring you in here? You've been an academic, obviously working in sport for a very long time. Can you talk a little bit about your interest in sport and the work that you've done in that field and are still doing?
Well, my interest in sport first comes from being involved as a competitive swimmer since the age of 9.
Okay.
I competed at the Out Games in Montreal with the Glamourheads, so I'm still active. I've also managed... I was a manager of the Sports Centre at Melbourne Uni for a number of years and managed elite teams, so I have that background. But my academic area, I teach... I suppose the largest sport management course in Australia, and I take my key subject is called ethics and social policy in sport, and that's all about human rights and diversity and making the students aware of how to create welcoming and inclusive sort of environments for everybody in the sporting context. And we do a little bit on animal rights and the environment as well.
Yep.
So, that's sort of my passion and interest. But I've also been working on the challenging homophobia in sport area in Australia for the past 10 years. And had some small success there. For instance, the Australian Sports Commission did bring out harassment-free sport guidelines and a program in the 2000, and one of the resources they created was to look at addressing homophobia and sexuality discrimination, and that was to equip sport to bring them, you know, some resources, because the law actually is very clear on sport being an environment that should be free of discrimination and harassment.
Yeah. Mm. So the legislation exists, but the reality is that obviously legislation is legislation, and what happens on the ground is what happens on the ground.
Well, I think what's happened is we do have this legislation, but And there has been money and resources put into programs to address discrimination, but it hasn't actually occurred in the homophobia area, the educational area. It's happened with people with a disability in sport, creating more opportunities and access and awareness.
Yeah.
It's happened with women and girls in sport, and that really needs to occur because there is a lot less girls and women involved in sport and physical activity. And
And there's been a lot
happened in the racism area. So there's funding there, but there's a reluctance, if you like, to take on the area of homophobia. It's seen as controversial, it's seen as difficult, and they haven't put any money towards it. We did have a come out to play forum 2005-2006 that I spearheaded with the Victorian Equal Opportunity Commission and Sport and Rec Victoria. But that wasn't really institutionalised. We had educational forums for sport, and it was quite well received. We had 80 sports bodies or people from sports bodies at two of those forums.
Yeah.
And then there's Play by the Rules, which is the main training package. It's an online one because you understand most sports are run. Community sports are run on kitchen tables there.
Yes.
Volunteers, they have to have access to training that's relatively easy and available, because the main concentration there is running the competition and the organisation.
And you were saying that you're introducing a new model.
Yeah, there'll be a new module on that.
Yep, and it's about addressing homophobia in sport.
Yeah, and it takes particularly the area of... There's a gay coach, and in the actual scenario, and they go through the legislation, and it brings up the whole issue of paedophilia as well.
Okay, yeah.
Caroline, can I ask you, what do you think constitutes homophobia in sport, in terms of how it's manifested? Like Rob's mentioned, sledging. I'm sure, does it include things like selection of people in teams, people on boards? Like what would you see as the range of the manifestation of homophobia in sport?
Well, it includes the ones you've mentioned, but I suppose there is anecdotal evidence to suggest that it's also affecting people getting positions in professional positions in sports administration and management.
What would a poof know about running a footy club?
Well... You know, yeah, I mean, it's...
I'm putting it bluntly.
In my case, that's a very good question. But
obviously in Rob's case, it's a different question.
Yeah. there's also, I mean, it's a fair bit deeper than that. And if I could go into the research on that.
Yes, please.
And the research isn't Australia-based so much as there's been a fair bit more. And this is specific to sport, not the same-sex attraction research that we may talk about too. But this is research done in North America, Europe and the UK predominantly. And you've got to look at male sport and female sport differently and put it within a broad context of gender as well. And understand that in modern society, and I'll try not to give a lecture here, I'll make it brief, sport's really the key shaper, reinforcer of sort of hegemony. Masculinity, the predominant heterosexual able-bodied masculinity that's it's celebrated in sport.
Yes.
And gay men in particular are, especially in the most celebrated masculine team sports, are sort of largely silent and silenced.
Yeah, Ian Roberts was an exception, I guess, wasn't he?
Well, he was the only player, if you like, that in professional male team sport that has come out during his playing time.
Yeah.
There's a few that have come out in retirement, like David Coppay and a couple in the States, and Justin Fashanu in soccer in England, but they usually come out after retirement.
Yeah.
Now, there's a fellow called Eric Anderson who studied 40 gay players in America in a number of different sports, and he said that overt discrimination against gay players is reduced, but there's still great heterosexist sort of norms where everyone's assumed to be heterosexual, and all the traditions and behaviours in the locker room and social sort of interaction, etc., is predicated on everybody being heterosexual.
Yes.
And there's a taboo about talking about gay issues or gay players. So that's how it works. In individual sports for men, it's a little bit different. There's less of this peer sort of pressure. Matthew Mitchum comes from diving, which is probably one of the most tolerant sort of sports for gay men.
Well,
and
Brian Pronger talks... tolerant?
Pardon?
What makes a sport like diving more tolerant than, say, some of the team sports like rugby or AFL?
Well, as I said, there's not this peer pressure.
Yeah.
There's not the sort of macho environment that predominates as much.
Because it looks more like ballet between the diving board and the water, this kind of balletic movement? Or is it that kind of thing?
Brian Pronger, who's done a fair bit of research, he divides the individual sports for men into, you know, the more aesthetic ones like diving.
Gymnastics.
And gymnastics, which are, you know, easier places to be.
Yeah.
And then there's the combative individual sports like wrestling, which are, you know, you go into the closet more there. It's not as safe. And
well, it's very confronting, isn't it? Because if someone has got issues...
That's right, well, physical.
You know, you're getting up very up close and personal with the person you're wrestling against, aren't
you? Exactly, yes. Yeah. I don't want some poof touching me,
Caroline,
when he's trying to throw
that's
me
right.
on the ground.
What about women's sport? Because you're making that clear distinction, and I guess in my head there's that sense of, well, as we said to... the woman who was on the show earlier, she said, well, think of lesbians, I think of tennis and golf. And softball, hockey are perhaps though perceived to be easier places for lesbians to be. What is the situation for women's sport?
Well, it's a bit more complicated than that.
And
let's just start off with saying that femininity doesn't sit very well with those most celebrated masculine team sports like football and like cricket and like hockey. And often women in those sports have to play up their femininity because their sexuality and their being women is sort of problematised. And women's sport is hungry for resources, you know. It doesn't get the media coverage that football and cricket and those most celebrated sports do.
Yes.
Mind you, a lot of the other male sports don't get that either.
That's right.
But women's sports, full stop, don't get much coverage. And to get... You need media coverage to get sponsorship and to get funding to run the sport.
Yeah.
As well as the recognition that you want. So the way that that's managed is, you know, with the issue of femininity is that the sports often have these image issues and they'll emphasise femininity and that's often very much a heterosexualised femininity.
Yes.
So that any women that don't fit into that, and this is straight and lesbian, might have a hard time. And, you know, there's stories of cricketers going into comportment classes and wearing makeup and dressing a particular way, you know, to emphasise the femininity. Yeah.
Which is, of course, completely stupid because you put on a pair of shorts and get sweaty. That's the whole point of playing sport, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But the environment for lesbians, I'd call it conditionally tolerant.
Okay, yep.
Okay, so that as long as you're not too visible... And as long as we, you know, fix this image issue up, it's okay that you're there.
Yep, because particularly a few years ago in the big world of women's tennis, if you wore a pair of shorts, you got into serious trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you think of Emily Maresmo, Martina Navratilova, who had big arms, and they're part men. It's not fair, you know.
Mm. That's right.
Crazy stuff.
The big thing with all of this, though, is that homophobia actually drives down participation amongst gay youth and straight youth that, you know, don't fit the hyper-athletic sort of model.
Yeah.
And it also drives down participation for girls and women in general. And there's this fear of the lesbian label that's driving it down.
And I'm saying that carefully because
it's not lesbians that's the problem, it's homophobia.
Exactly. Yeah.
Rob, it starts way back in primary school, doesn't it, really?
It does.
Rob, you were particularly moved by the La Trobe University writing themselves in report, which talked about same-sex attracted youth and the way they feel so unsafe in sporting environments.
Well, the research is very confronting.
Yes.
Because it's been done over a number of years. And, you know, again, you know, we should be thankful that we have people like Dr. Lynn Hillier and you know, Dr. Carolyn Simons and, you know, Professor Anne Mitchell doing this research, because that's the way that we're going to ultimately solve this.
Yeah.
Because it's really critical to understand that in that the research tells us, as Carolyn has said, that there's a problem there with the reduced participation rates.
Yep.
There's the fact there that only 19% of these same-sex attracted youth feel safe around sporting clubs or sporting events. So that then generates two problems. One, there's a physical health problem.
Yep.
Because they are not participating in sport, and the benefits of sport participation at every level are very well documented.
Mm.
That sense of, the sense of community,
yes.
The actual physical health, the mental health, the connectedness, all that is well documented.
Yep.
The other problem, though, is that because we're getting this discrimination and prejudice and they're feeling unsafe, that has tremendously, profoundly bad impacts to their mental health.
Yeah.
Let's look at the heterosexual self-harm or suicidal thought rate in that 15 to 24-year-old age group.
Yep.
In men, it runs at around 5 to 6% if they're heterosexual. If they identify as gay, it runs up to about 20%. Bisexual or undecided males in that age group, 30% of them at some point are so sick of the degradation and the vilification that they want to engage in self-harm.
Right. Mm.
That is, and that's something that we should be, as a community, not just as the LBGTI community, but as a broad community, we should be up in arms over that.
It's a serious mental health problem.
It is a serious mental health problem. And you know, if people take nothing else away from this discussion today, it is along with, in terms of the gay and lesbian community, okay, I understand HIV is the predominant, or is the health issue that comes to mind, but mental health, particularly amongst our same-sex attracted youth, that is a critical problem that is, should be, and can be fixed.
Yep, and particularly, I suppose, if you think about rural young people, it's hard enough being gay often in a rural community where your main link into that community is sport.
That's right.
And you can't safely make that link into the community. It just doubles that sense of isolation, doesn't it?
That's exactly right.
We're on a very interesting discussion here on Saturday Magazine about homophobia in sport with Dr. Caroline Simons and Rob Mitchell. We're going to let them take a breather. We'll have a few messages from our sponsors. And Rob, you've chosen a song for us.
I have.
Things Can Only Get Better.
By Doreen. Unfortunately, it shows my age.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy. Choice of our guest, Rob Mitchell, or one of our guests this morning. And you're listening to Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, and our guests are, as I've said, Rob Mitchell, accidental activist, and Dr. Caroline Simons from the Sunbury campus of Victoria University, talking about homophobia in sport.
Things can only get better. The front page story of MCV is about Kem Campagnolo, I can never get poor Ken's name right, who has lost his case against the AFL. Basically, what he was trying to state was that the AFL should take some responsibility for the behaviour of country football clubs.
Well, it actually went a bit further than that, because the AFL get a good lump of funding from the Australian Sports Commission, some $460,000 a year.
Yep.
Now, it's a condition of the funding agreement that they don't use those funds for professional or, you know, elite aspects of the code. So the idea is that that money is put into things like, you know, the anti-racism policies at the grassroots level, you know, gender diversity, so, you know, respect and responsibility towards women.
Yep.
But you might want to ask me how much of that goes towards homophobia.
How much of that goes towards homophobia?
It's a big round sort of a number. It's zero.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, absolutely zero.
Right.
So they've said in that case.
Oh, which is the Victorian Council of Administrative Tribunal, where Ken took his case.
Took his case, and they've said, well, look, you know what? We actually don't make the rules for anybody else. All we do, poor little AFL, is all we do is just, you know, make the rules for the 16 elite teams. I think it's 16 elite teams, you know, with the 700 odd elite players.
Except don't they draw a lot of those players from country footy clubs?
Well, they do, but, you know, obviously...
Aren't they interested in grassroots participation?
Obviously, I've got some real problems with the line of argument that they're running. You know, I mean, everybody knows that the AFL is the peak code-making body for football. For every level.
Yeah.
And I just find it profoundly worrying that they've got their hand out for $460,000 a year from the Australian Sports Commission when they earn somewhere north of $220 million a year, which they don't pay any tax on.
Yeah,
amazing.
Okay.
And they take the $460,000, but then when, you know, and it's very rare that people front up and take the AFL to court.
Yes.
But when somebody does and says, I think you should be doing something about this, they go, you know what, A, it's nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
B, see you later.
Yep, yep. And yet there have been a few individuals within the AFL who have spoken out that something is wrong and something needs to be done.
This is, and you're
absolutely not, it's recognised at some level.
And Nathan Burke, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? You know, the match tonight is between St Kilda and Hawthorn.
Yeah.
You know, St Kilda, we've got a director there, Nathan Burke, who's, you know, a dyed-in-the-wool heterosexual footy player, very well regarded, thinks that this is something desperately required to be sorted. Just remind me who the president of Hawthorn again is.
Wasn't it some chap that's also attached to Beyond Blue that was talking about the fact that if the club really needed to protect their young people from Ken, because if he was a bisexual masseuse, you had to protect them from the paedophiles, so you had to protect them from
Bill Kennett or something like
Kennett,
that.
Some Kennett, Kennett. Chap,
Bill
yes.
George.
So we've got. So who are we barracking for tonight then?
Could we all please barrack for St Kilda? You know, and I know there are some Hawthorn supporters out there that are sort of now turning down the dial, but you know there are bigger issues at stake.
Get a new president.
Well.
So what do we do? I mean, we could sit here for hours and hours and hours, and unfortunately, you know, another radio show is going to come in here at 12 o'clock and throw us out. What do we need to do? There's some acknowledgement that it exists at the highest level.
Yep.
There is some acknowledgement that exists. Country footy clubs and things are starting to do some work.
Absolutely.
There is some acknowledgement. So what do we need to do from a point of view of government and sporting bodies to make a difference?
Okay, what we need to do, and Carolyn will come in here as well, but what we need to do is we need to have clear, consistent messages sent out at every level that homophobia in sport is unacceptable. We've got the legislation in place to do it,
yep,
with the Equal Opportunity Act. We've got the research. The research is impenetrable,
yep,
okay? I mean, it is fantastic research,
there's
and
no
we know
argument.
That it's a problem. There's no argument there. What we need now is the administrators to make an acknowledgement, and the acknowledgement is this. If they don't have out players in their code, like the canaries going into the coal mine, there's something profoundly wrong.
Yeah.
The research tells us that 10% of youth are same-sex attracted. If they're not comfortable with disclosing, self-disclosing, there's something wrong.
Yep.
It is not a good thing that we don't have out athletes at every level.
Yeah.
That's the cultural shift that's required. How do we do that? Well, what we do for a start is we start writing to Kate Ellis, the Federal Minister for Sport, who is in charge of the Australian Sports Commission, and we get them off their jacksy so that they start saying to the sporting codes, you know, we ask Minister Ellis to pull the boots on, okay, and to get out there and say to the Australian Sports Commission, this money that you're giving out, not just to the AFL, in the case of $460,000 a year, right, but to every code that you're giving, they give out tons of money, tons of taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Part of that has got to go into making sure that the appropriate policies and procedures and training is carried out.
Yep, because at least 10% of their taxpayers fit into the community.
Well, unfortunately, they're not taxpayers. You know, these 15 to 24-year-old same-sex youth, you know, they're very, very vulnerable.
But you and I are taxpayers, Rob.
We are.
Caroline, Jeff.
We are, and we need to be, you know, and if you've got a pen out there, if you want to go to www.rjm, as in Mitchell, rjm.org, you'll see there's a PDF right in front of you, and you can download the PDF that we are going to be placing ads, getting the Federal Sports Minister to do precisely this. And feel free to leave a comment on the blog, because they'll all be going up to the Sports Minister's office, and we need to reassure the Minister that there's broad community support for this.
Yep. Caroline, what's your opinion on all this?
Well, a bit's happening overseas.
Yeah.
You know, in the Netherlands, they have a four-year plan to address homophobia in sports, funded by the Ministry of Sport in partnership with the Dutch Olympic Committee and the Dutch Football Association.
Right.
The Football Association of England, UK, is actually got some programs and awareness programs, leaders speaking out courageously saying, let's, you know, we can't accept homophobia in sport. There is action happening elsewhere. We need to be leading this too, instead of sticking our head in the stand and the government being fearful. So Rob's perfectly right, and we need to, if we're going to get this going, his strategy of the ad and writing to the minister is very important. I think the key things is we need some courageous leadership from government, from health promotion organisations like Vic Health and like Beyond Blue, etc. as well. We need to make sure that all sports have got codes and policies in place, but make sure that they live within the organisation as well. We have to start collecting best practice examples, because there are some good sports organisations that are inclusive, and we need to use those as examples for sport so that they know what to do and how to get there. And we've got to keep speaking about this, because it's often one that is silent, and there's these circles of silence around it, so it needs to be kept in conversation and at any point in time. And we're going to have a forum, a community forum.
And we'll come and talk about that in a minute. Rob's bursting out of his seat.
And Carolyn, I just think, you know, as a gay man, I find it profoundly interesting that the three people who have been, you know, sort of spearheading all the research and, you know, the play by all the rules, you know, yourself, Lynn Hillier and Anne Mitchell, you know, you're all, you know, very, very competent academics. But I actually think that's the penultimate qualification that the three of you have got for wanting to do this. Do you know what the ultimate qualification is, I reckon?
What?
You're all parents.
Yes.
And you want the best thing for your kids.
Oh, we do.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. We want our kids to be able to go to a sporting club, no matter whether it's about their race, their sexual, their sexual orientation, their gender, whatever it is. Yeah. They need to be able to be themselves.
Yeah. And they may experience that through having parents that are gay as well. So
that's right. Yeah. It's just a huge situation. Do we need more sports people to be brave
and
stand up and be counted?
We do, and it needs to be people that are respected in authority that make these statements that
have
that impact. Gay and straight.
Yep. So tell us about your forum, because, you know, Rob's trying to marshal support through the email and letter writing campaign. We need to feel, I guess people need to not feel alone too. You know, you've kind of been, Rob, you've been barreling away on this for a while. You had that great article in the Herald Sun. You've got your website. You're obviously, Caroline, doing an amazing job professionally as well as personally in this. Tell us about this forum to try and bring people together and marshal the troops, if you like.
Yes. Well, next Wednesday night, it's the 24th of September, it's called Our Sporting Lives, and it's a community forum where we're bringing together the LGBT bodies in Victoria, as well as VU and the Equal Opportunity Commission and the RGM Trust.
Right.
Rob, be there. And we're going to be talking. We're going to be looking at where we're at the moment with homophobia in sport, what's been done, what needs to be done. We'll explore that, because we'll be exploring, talking, sharing, if you like, our experiences, our knowledge, etc. And we'll hopefully, I would like to get a group form that can have a plan and strategy and be active to really make an impact in this area.
Yeah, and you've got people like the Out Games on board, Queer Sports Alliance Melbourne, which obviously is the encompassing body of a lot of gay sporting clubs.
We've also, I mean, Carolyn and I had a great meeting with Pippa Grange, who's the head psychologist of the AFL Players Association. And I think Carolyn will, you know, agree with me. I mean, she is very, very keen to, you know, to contribute.
Yes.
I mean, but it is, as from their perspective, I think, you know, it's a they perceive it as a complex issue.
Yes.
Yep.
And, you know, because obviously they sort of get attached to a whole lot of causes. That's part of it. You know, they're doing a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Too complex to take on, or willingness to take it on, but seeing that there's a lot to be done in terms of the complexity? Like, that can scare people off and say, it's too complex, let's leave it.
Look, I think the complexity depends on what filter you're looking at it through. You know, from my perspective, it's not complex at all. My human rights perspective is we are stuck on a piece of rock hurtling through space, and it would be better if we all got along with each other and you know, just respected of each other, you know, regardless of what, the colour of our skin, where we were born, you know, our sexual orientation, our gender, right?
It's kind of simple. We've all got the right to exist happily, don't we?
And it's not rocket science. And unfortunately, as I said, we've got a lot of good science behind this. I think from their perspective, from the Players Association, you know, they just know that the AFL is really, I don't know, I don't want to say that they're intransigent, but, you know, it does come across as being difficult because the VCFL, the Country Footy League, is really up to speed with this,
yes,
right? So, you know, I just think that we need to, you know, we need to get more dialogue going with the Players Association, because I tell you what, if we can get this to fly, you know, and we can get it to fly, it is impossible to overestimate how beneficial the effect we can.
Yeah.
And you're obviously saying that you need a big player. What I mean is a big player in the field, like the AFL. Not as in a big name player to come out, although that wouldn't hurt.
That wouldn't hurt, but you've got to, I think, understand that the reason that we don't have an out forward from Carlton or Collingwood who's on $500,000 a year, the reason he doesn't come out is because of the same reason a 17-year-old in Ararat doesn't come out. They're shitting themselves.
Yep.
Okay, so let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's, you know, create the right environment and the rest will follow.
I'm keen to make this whole area broader as well, to look at all of sport.
That's right.
And how it impacts on women in sport too.
Yeah. So to change the environment, you actually need all the little sporting clubs on board too, don't you? You need everybody involved
in
sport at the grassroots level, right up to the big potatoes.
That's right.
To be involved.
Yes. Yeah.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.